We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Say that we can build a newer and better nation.
The work goes on. The cause endures.
My life is about being lucky as a child to be raised by parents who love me.
What a lot of people remember my father for doing, which is to make politics a noble and an honorable profession.
These are the voices of a dynasty. John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Teddy Kennedy, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, John Jr., and the many other Kennedys who formed this political dynasty that defined Democratic Party politics in the years after FDR. In some ways, American history is told in these voices.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it.
Many of us can speak these moments word for word. Yet each of these voices contains a piece of the spirit and the man who set the entire Kennedy dynasty in motion, Joseph P. Kennedy, who made a mission out of building a fortune to protect his children from the depression he predicted, a mission out of creating a political machine dedicated to giving back what he had amassed, a brilliant man whose astounding successes could not match the depth of the tragedy in his deeply heartbreaking failures. Historian David Nassau is the author of a new biography, The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy. He says Joe Kennedy's life is the story of a titanic clash between deep compassion and unbridled ambition.
The story of Joseph P. Kennedy is a story of an outsider who becomes an insider, won't play by the rules, becomes an outsider, makes his way back in. It's twists and turns, rises and falls and rises again. He grows up in East Boston. His father is a prominent politician and businessman. He goes across the channel to Boston, Boston Latin. He's a leader in the school. After his years at Boston Latin, Kennedy goes to Harvard. His greatest tragedy at Harvard was that he didn't make the baseball team. It was on graduating from Harvard that he recognized that as an Irish Catholic boy from East Boston, whose father had been a ward leader, he was going to be shut out of the one industry he wanted to go into, banking and finance. He received no job offers. He received no interviews. He received no interest whatsoever. Though he was smart, he knew numbers, he was charming, intelligent, had a Harvard degree. The only way he could get into banking was to take a civil service exam for an assistant bank examiner and look into bank books.
This was an individual who was truly gifted at finance, and you discover that. It's part of the story here. But the other part of the story is he didn't seem to be motivated by the kinds of banking motivations that we see today. He wasn't a particularly greedy character. He was a smart and competitive character and really wanted to get rich to help his family. And there wasn't much beyond that. There were grand ambitions beyond money. But as far as money was concerned, he just wanted to get rich early.
He said to everyone, friend and foe, Franklin Roosevelt said that Joseph Kennedy told him this at least a dozen times, that his only goal in life was to make enough money so he could leave each of his 9 children $1 million. He wanted his children, and he said this very early and often, to go into public service. But in order to do that, they had to have the money. He knew that money bought not status. It bought some status. But it would give them the backing, the security, the income they needed so that they would not have to work and they could go into public service in a way that he might have liked to do but was unable to do.
David Nassau is author of The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy, and professor at CUNY Graduate Center. We'll continue with him in a moment. Continuing now with David Nassau, author of The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy.
He knew early that he had a head for stocks. He knew which companies were undervalued. He knew which companies were going up. And he began trading stocks while he was still in Harvard and kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. He learned every trick of the trade, and he used every trick that was legal. And there was a lot that was legal then that is no longer legal today, in large part because Joseph P. Kennedy was the first chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And he outlawed all those practices that had allowed him to make millions and millions and millions of dollars.
How did he overreach so badly at the Court of St. James in England? Really, he had achieved so much by the time he was granted the ambassadorship to London. And there was no reason to believe he could do anything else but just coast from there on. And that's not what happened at all.
During the Great Depression, the fears were, by Kennedy and many others, that capitalism would never recover, that the United States would go the way of Germany or Italy or the Soviet Union, that capitalism would be destroyed, and with capitalism, democracy. And Kennedy became an ardent New Dealer and supporter of Franklin Roosevelt because he believed Roosevelt was the only one who was going to save capitalism. By 1938, capitalism had been saved. Democracy was safe. But there was another threat on the horizon, World War or European War. And Kennedy was absolutely convinced that once war came to Europe, and if the United States was drawn into that war, depression conditions would return. Everything he had fought for all his life, all those millions of dollars he had put away, would be blown out to sea, and with it, the country and the democracy that he loved and the capitalism that had allowed him to make this money for his children. So he was terrified. And the kind of fear that he felt influenced what had once been rather impeccable judgment.
He was on the side of Neville Chamberlain. He was believed to be a Nazi sympathizer, but instead he was a war avoider. But he was willing to make peace almost at any price.
Even after Neville Chamberlain realized that it was impossible to deal with Hitler, that Hitler was a madman, Kennedy refused to grasp that fact. Mm-hmm. Kennedy was a businessman. And as a businessman, he believed you can sit across the table with anyone and negotiate a deal. And he was convinced almost to the last minute that Hitler was eccentric, that Hitler had a horrible temper, that Hitler was not a nice man, he had no manners, but that in the end, he would do what was right for Germany, or so Kennedy believed, very, very mistakenly.
Joseph P. Kennedy's boys, at a certain point, parted company with their father on his political judgments, on the kinds of things that he believed was the way forward. And that story is really dramatic in this book. Describe some of the ways in which his sons particularly parted company with him.
Kennedy opposed the war with all his might. When war came, his sons decided they were going to go in. They were not only going to go into the military to fight the war that he had tried to prevent with every ounce of his being, but they were going to go into the most dangerous combat positions. Kennedy was horrified, horrified, and he tried to talk him out of it. But he brought up these kids to be tough, to be as tough as he was. And he realized that when they made up their minds to do something, they were going to do it, and he was going to help them out along the way.
You describe this as a life devoted to the security and success of his family. And certainly the success is undeniable, but the security. In the end, he could not deliver that security to his sons and to his children. And the end of this story is so heartbreaking. What was it like to basically walk the path of Joseph P. Kennedy's just undoing emotionally?
It was not easy because I knew what was coming, and yet I had to live his life as he lived it, not knowing that his oldest son, his namesake, the man he thought had the best chance of being president. He never thought Jack was going to do well in politics because Jack was too sick. Joe Jr. was handsome, was charming, was articulate. He was going to be the president. And Joe Jr. was killed when his plane was incinerated after D-Day, when the war was nearly over. And then he lost Kick, his charming, beautiful, loved daughter, also in a plane crash. And he lost Rosemary, his oldest daughter. He tried desperately to find a way to help this retarded girl. She was slow, and everybody knew she was slow. And he was told that if she had this tiny little operation, they'd just remove a little bit of her brain, and she'd still be slow, but she wouldn't be angry. She wouldn't be upset. And she was turned into a vegetable instead, and he lost his third child. And then Jack was elected president in 1960, and Bobby was made attorney general because Kennedy insisted to Jack. He said to Jack, you can't trust anybody. Take it from me, you can't trust anybody. You need Bobby in the cabinet to watch your back. So he had a son who was president, and that son was gunned down. Was assassinated. Kennedy had a stroke before then and was unable to speak, was unable to communicate. And his son Ted and his daughter Eunice came into his bedroom and had to tell him that his son Jack had been assassinated. And then came Bobby. When Kennedy died, 5 of his 9 children had died before him. And for a man who took pride, took love, took comfort in his children, lived for his children, I mean, that was the greatest tragedy of all.
David Nassau, author of The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy, is a professor at the CUNY Graduate Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you.